Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So I thought I'd say something about doubt. How to overcome doubt practice. And, essentially, the best solution to this is a very simple one. The way to overcome doubt is to get results. So often we have to practice with faith at the beginning, and for a little while, and then we start to realize the benefits, then that will overcome our doubt. There's always practice will often tend to take a little while to bear fruit, so there's always this period where we just have to practice out of faith. So a group is very helpful for this. You get together with a group of other beginners and you just keep each other going. One way or another. There can be doubt on a number of different levels, so we can address this doubt in different ways. There can be doubt as to the ideas or theories or principles, and of course, you know, you can just take these to a teacher if you find one. They're often good to sit with it first, try and find your own answer. So a mistake to get too dependent on a teacher. We try to look for our own answer is a good idea. Often if something is on this kind of thinking level, then if we just calm the mind a little, then the answers can start to pop up for ourselves, or if we just read a little further, or try a different angle on it. So we want to try to develop self-reliance always as a practitioner rather than dependence. In this kind of way anyway, you know, we can lean on the group in a lot of other ways, but this one it's often good to try and find your own answers. If you keep asking around, it's often a mistake to ask everybody, because you end up with a whole lot of different answers which not necessarily apply to you so well. We all have our different paths. So you want to find a single person who's preferably someone who's at least 10 years or so experience of meditation and Dhamma practice. Doubt is another area in which the mind can get tricky, and it can be something else underneath. So not want to be trusted so much, but also, you know, we notice that even though doubt is there, we can still potter along and keep going in the face of the doubt. And we don't have to let it put us off. Sometimes our doubt can come out of a kind of speculation, or if we end up going too much our own way. So if we're in a group of people and a group of practitioners, then it's much easier to resolve our doubts if we're practicing in a similar way to others. So if we're kind of roughly going along with the group and what's the practices that are recommended, we're trying out the ones that are recommended. Then we end up much more part of the group and much more able to resolve our doubts. Whereas if we, you know, we like to do our own reading and do our own practice and go our own way and things a lot more, then we always have a lot more doubt. We won't have the signals around us, the people around us to show us when we're going too far left or too far right or whatever. So it's good to be able to just stick with the things of the group, follow along as best we can. So it's to be in the middle of the group, it's more easier, particularly at the beginning, to be in the middle of the group rather than be on the outside. Our tendency is to be a bit more on the outside at the beginning, a bit tentative, want to go at things our own way a bit, but we'd encourage people to just try things out before we make up your mind. Just try out the instructions that are offered, or the guidance that's offered the group. Not to do too many different things at the beginning. Although you want to get a general sense of practicing, a continuous sense of practice of different aspects of our lives. We also don't want to be doing too many different things, introducing too many different things, particularly in terms of the formal meditation. So just stick to one meditation object at the beginning and then maybe add a second. You settle into that one, you think, oh yes, that one works away, going away all right. Maybe add a second technique or whatever it would be later on. To have one particular meditation object that we turn to at times of difficulty, the strong one, the one that we've done the most, we just kick in with in order to get perspective on something. Just as often the source of doubt here that people worry about, are we very psychological, psychotherapeutic world, very influential these days. Therapists will doubt the idea of suppressing mind states through using a meditation object. And yet what we discover as meditators, often these things are said by people who don't practice. Because if you are a meditator, then you realise that you can have your meditation object in the centre of your mind, then other things can go on the periphery and you see them more clearly for them being out of the middle. They're not taking you over, and they're not taking you over, taking your place, so to speak. Then you can see them more clearly than if they're right in the middle and overwhelming you, pushing you around. So doubt is another example of the ways our passions can push us around. It can be quite an intense one if we got involved in the practice. Maybe something goes wrong, or somebody challenges our faith. We can go through quite a lot of difficulty. Somebody doesn't behave very beautifully, say, that we'd had faith in. And of course we can find ourselves suffering over that. Coming back to ourselves and thinking, well, I was unwise to put so much faith in somebody else. My faith has to go past individuals. It has to be rooted in ourselves and our own practice and our own sense of it. End up having faith in ourselves, developing faith in ourselves, our ability to develop wisdom and compassion in our lives. So it needn't be faith in Buddhism. We could end up even having no faith in Buddhism for one reason or another, and yet still practicing. because we can see that the practices that we're engaging in help us to develop wisdom and compassion in our lives. So we can make too much of a convention. A friend of mine who was a young monk went to a great teacher. He was suffering a lot of doubt and previously been quite involved in Christianity. I'd grown up a Christian in America, and he was saying to the Ajahn, "Oh, I keep doubting, this is the way." And I was expecting the Ajahn to show him how Buddhism is better than Christianity, but he didn't at all. He just said, "Well, you're making too much out of convention." He's not making too much out of the convention. You see, Buddhism is just a convention that allows us to practice a spiritual quest. A group of people that are out to help each other along with a common agreement to a code of behaviour in order to protect the group. That's about all there is, isn't it? Kind of framework. What is there to doubt? Do we doubt that we shouldn't harm other beings? Do we doubt that we shouldn't? Do we doubt the five precepts? Patience is required as well. That we don't apply effort and then we just fall into doubt because we lack patience. If our lives have been going in one direction for a long time, it can take a while to turn things around. The forces of habit actually are far stronger than we give them credit for. This can be a urge us on as well as be a source of doubt. Because you see what our desires, for example, will resort to in our minds if we're trying to restrain ourselves. We see that they're not very nice things. It's my first meditation retreat. I was sitting there, and there was stuff coming up, and I just said to myself, I'm just so sick of this stuff pushing me around. I really don't want to be pushed around by this stuff anymore. Didn't doubt that. I just didn't want to be pushed around anymore. Never mind, follow it or not follow it. I was just filling up with just the fact that it was trying to push me around. Not to be pushed around by all these things in my mind. That's how pleasant it was to be nagged by my own mind. This is the kind of ways that our experience can take us beyond doubt, whereas an idea doesn't so easily. We have an idea, some idea about desire, or is it right or not really. If we actually sit there and experience the flood of desire, that is how unpleasant it is. This thing trying to push you around, that's a different thing. Always to come back to the idea that practice is paramount, and to get into a lot of thinking and theory and listening to too many talks or just staying on this level doesn't really cut the mustard. We have to kind of try and take ourselves through something, or challenge ourselves. And if we're living a comfortable life, then we challenge ourselves. Go hiking somewhere or something, walking up in the mountains, and pack on your back, and challenge yourself somehow or another. See what happens. See how happy you are without your homely comforts or whatever it is. And see the conditioned nature of worldly happiness if we can challenge ourselves like that. And freedom of not needing, not having so many needs in life. You need to really experience that. So, well, on time I got sick one time. Quite badly sick, and afterwards I was a bit overly protective of myself. I always used to carry extra clothes everywhere with me and all this kind of thing, just in case, you know, a bit like that. And this went on for a while. I remember once going cycling with a friend of mine with my usual little pack on my back with all my extra clothes and everything in it. And we were getting off the train with our bikes, and I forgot my bag. I left my bag behind and left it on the train. So we ended up cycling around the border country. I didn't have any of my little safety pack on my back with my extra clothing. I felt fantastic. A tremendous sense of liberation. I guess also, you know, I was lucky that it didn't, you know, that the weather didn't turn or something. That's true enough. But for a moment I saw another side. I realised I'd been overly cautious and stifled by that. I'd been stifled by a mother's love, isn't it? And blokes here can feel like this. And mum starts fussing and it's, oh mum, you know, and feel stifled by it. This is a kind of first taste of renunciation or liberation, and these kind of tastes are necessary to resolve our doubts. A sense of freedom, adventure. How much adventure we have in our lives. We get a bit humdrum, can't it? So one of the greatest, the psychologists say, one of the greatest sources of happiness in life is risk-taking. To me, this is kind of, it's confirming this. You get a sense of freedom taking a risk. Freedom from attachment. Willing to take the risk. A calculated risk. So I offer this for your reflection.